Yes, we're in recording. So welcome to Recovery Radio. And we have John Case, who seems to be in Hawaii, or maybe Atlantic. No, it couldn't be Atlantic City. I see some palm trees. Yeah, he's doing his thing. And my name is James Ford. I'm hosting Recovery Radio as a part of Enlightened Radio. John is in Bolivar, West Virginia. Yeah, all my friends who are going to be hopefully viewing this and looking, and I'm in Newark, New Jersey. And what we've been doing is talking to one another around a lot of issues, and Recovery Radio is where we talk about substance use disorder. And then we have segments, learning segments on Recovery Radio, which is what I would like to segue into right now, John. We have Enlightened Radio where music is. People can listen while they're sitting around thinking about which meeting they're going to go to. How do they get to you? How do they get to you, man?
Well, it's very easy. You go to www.enlightenradio.org, and the Enlightened Radio part is all one word. www.enlightenradio.org. And the player is at the top of the page, and you can click on the player. And I would say we're playing 20 out of 24 hours. we have some things where I'm a little bit down for maintenance, or redoing the various playlists that run on the radio station. So they'll be run 24/7, except for, you know, 2 or 3 hours during the day when we're doing live shows and when we're doing maintenance. So other than that,
what are some of the other shows?
On Mondays, we have two shows. We have storytelling with Fanny Crawford and Stasha Bukowski. Fanny is becoming a renowned storyteller, and certainly in the East Coast.
She has a voice.
And she has impersonates several different people, mostly from her family. Some going back a couple hundred years. Her dad told her a lot of stories about her family. And she's very accomplished at doing it. And she has it. And Stasha Okowski has been doing storytelling around the country for over 50 years. He's been having some health problems recently, but he still is doing the broadcasts. And, if you want to feel like what it was like for a kid that joined the Army too young in the early 50s and grew up in the American military, and then the 1960s hit the world.
Yeah, you're listening to Recovery Radio. Yeah, this is how we flow. This is how we flow. And I've been working with John for quite some time now, so I've amassed a pretty good library of Recovery Radio podcasts. And so if you want to find me, you can just go to Google and type in podcast. Yeah.
Podcast.enlightenedradio.org will get you a list of all the podcasts, and you can also go to Democracy Road.
Democracy Road, yeah, that's the Podbean.
democracyroad.podbean.com, and you'll see both all of Fanny's storytelling shows, and the Labor Beat Radio show, and the Sports Attack and Comedy show with Mike Diesel, and the poetry show with Janet Harrison, and the Winners and Losers radio show with our Shepherdstown friends, and especially Karen Valentine.
Great line, great lineup, John. Great line, great line.
By the way, Karen and I are
we're always looking for guests too. Always looking for invited guests, people who have a particular skill set, or somebody just want to come on Recovery Radio and share their story.
Have a good conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Enlightening. Very enlightening. Say that again, John.
Well, how often during the day do you have a really good conversation.
Really good conversation. Well, I wonder what the numbers are on that. I wonder what the numbers are on that. Yeah, you know, I mean, how often
what's your job? I count good conversations.
like laps around the track. And so on Recovery Radio, which I do the show every Thursday, we're going to be going at 5 o'clock. All right, John, we're going to crack it up.
That's right.
5 o'clock every Thursday. So if you want to just pop in, stop by and say hi, or either share your stories or pass on some information, because this is a resource broadcast as well. So we try to put resources out there for people who are looking for maybe housing or just a good facility to go to you know, get rehabilitation, if there is such a thing.
Right.
People have to first get habilitated before they can seek rehabilitation. But that's a conversation we like to have on
radio.
We like to open it up, crack it open, and see what's going on.
Never
go
been,
ahead, John.
Mm-hmm. I've never been habilitated, so how can I be
rehabilitated? That is a conversation. And so for everybody over there where I work, you all know who you are. I'm not even going to put it out there like that, because I don't want nobody running over to my job and trying to seek me out. You know, I don't know what kind of, I don't know where we're going in this world today with how people react and around, I don't know, mental illness, drug addiction, poverty. I mean, driving people up the wall. And where I work is just, you see so much dysregulation that, you know, a regulated person like yourself, John, is a welcome sight. You know, a well-regulated, well-rounded guy like yourself is a welcome sight. But yeah, over where I work, man, it's a scream. It's an 8-hour scream. Remember the movie Scream? People are screaming and running around in circles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
But I really do. I love my job because it's, you know, basically it's giving back every day. Even though I go over there and complain like Dickens, when I see somebody make it out of there and don't come back, you know, and that's another topic I wanted to see how you feel about a theory. Something that's theoretical. I heard somebody say, create the disease and sell the cure. What do you think about that theory?
Well, that's an ancient theory.
Is it?
Yeah, that's not new. But
is it fact or is it just theoretical?
Oh, it's not just theoretical.
Not just theoretical.
No, it's not. No. No. Hmm. I mean, you can have accidents that happen, like pandemics or, you know, big poisonings or whatever, or some new weapon or some new threat. And then people that see an opportunity, okay, to exploit. Well, they didn't invent the original event, but they can certainly use it to drive home their real agenda as, oh, by the way, we'll also fix this big problem.
Right. You know, and make some money along the way.
Well, of course. So
people, so I guess the think tanks and people that put ideas together like that.
Well, problem is, every one of the, but every one of the big billionaires has their own think tank. All thinking up plots along similar lines. Okay. So it's not like there's only one. And so that's the problem they have is that, you know, most of them think that their chief adversaries are each other. But actually, as far as the population goes, all of them together are like adversaries for most of the whole population.
The whole population of the world. Right.
I mean, it depends on whether you got an uplook or an outlook, I suppose. You know,
uplook or outlook. Oh, wow. Can you expound on that one? What's the uplook?
Yeah, I mean, most people are born with an uplook, you know. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can think about and dream about and imagine and possibly, you know, do or create. But
is that abstract?
They're going to have to get a little bit more money, or they're not going to be able to do any of it.
To do it, yeah. So is that would
but
that
you
be
get all
abstract?
Kinds of people born in with education and and reasonable amount of wealth, whatever that is. And they got an outlook. They can think about the future. They can look out, not up. You know, so
they can look out, or uplook and an outlook. I got
it. Yeah, uplook is the main thing you see is the boot coming heading down on you.
An outlook. I got an outlook. Abstraction is a conceptual process wherein general rules and concepts are derived from the usage and clarification of specific examples. Literal signifiers.
If you're up in the lighthouse looking out, that's one thing. You know, if you're down at the basement, that's an uplook.
That's an uplook. Oh, that's an uplook for sure, right? Wow. So I need to give me an outlook, man. That's what I want.
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what happens if you give a poor person some education, they start to acquire an outlook.
You got an outlook.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so we need
hey boss, not just hey boss. This is I can see the same thing you can see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Get an outlook,
Get an outlook.
Listen to this, fellas. We gotta get some outlook going on. Looking out. Yeah. Not looking up. Not looking out. Look at an outlook. Yeah. So abstract. This is what abstract thinking is, because you can put something together in your head, man, and it looks wonderful. But you gotta get some money, like you said. You gotta put some money together. It says, while some psychologists believe that abstract thinking skills are a natural product of normal development. So let's stop right there. What I've heard, what I've been taught, or what I've read is that when you start using chemicals, certain chemicals like the hard drugs, fentanyl and some hallucinogenics, that at some point your cognitive development and your development of your thinking, like the maturity, it either slows down or maybe stops altogether. I'm not sure which I read, but so I'm working in an environment where everybody, they come in there because they've experienced drug addiction. And some to one extreme and some to the other extreme. But the cognitive abilities are always affected, especially with the overdose. And so everybody's together in one room, you know what I mean? And so these abilities, and so when you're trying to get back some kind of normalcy in your life, that's why people come into detox and go through recovery. They're trying to get back some normalcy in their life, and we're constantly encouraging them to be adults. You know we grown people in here. and then you hang around a while and you're not so sure, because people get bigger, they don't always get smarter, and things happen. You know, you don't get smarter, you're gonna get bigger, you're gonna grow. In a lot of cases, people grow, physically grow, but the mental part, and there's a lot of mental anguish that's obvious, you know. But when you have a mission statement, because I mean, most entities go by a mission and a vision, and they try to adhere to that. But when you're dealing with the population, such as the one that, you know, I go to work with and talk to every day, and and get to know and befriend and try to, be a good employee. You can see that something is wrong. Something is definitely off. And you can see where it can be repaired, right? So I can see that in my head. So that would be the abstract stuff that's going on for me. I can experience it in my head, you know, but when I look, am I looking up or look when I look out? No, that's not an out. Yeah. When I look out, what I see is not really what I experience, you know. So when I look out, you did abstract thinking and put that whole picture together in my head. And then when you come back to human behavior and humankind and what happens, how people get to where they are dysregulated, and what happens when an overdose is reversed, and what information is lost, and, you know, and how does that affect the behavior of a person? You know, and then you have a workforce who is, you know, we're mostly understaffed and undertrained. When a person's life is at stake, you need trained. I want somebody that's a professional, really professional, have that attitude and that outlook. And they have guidelines for us to go by to be able to navigate these waters. But, when you're in business, and it's a business, sometimes you don't have time for that because the bottom line is still the bottom line monetarily. And that's, I mean, it's unfortunate.
Whoa, a second. So the bottom line. So how does that show itself up? I mean, does that mean the person who comes in has to go out in a certain amount of time? Otherwise, they cost more than any money. Nobody could be made from it. Or is it based on, what's it based on, how long they can do or how much care they can give before it's no longer profitable?
Well, I don't have the answers to those questions because I'm a grunt. I'm on the front line, so I'm not privy to that information. However, I could give a common sense, from my experience, what I've seen, how people transition in and out, and what I've been told by individuals who are leaving, or where they're going and how they're going there and why they need an extension and why they can't get an extension. You know, I gotta go back and just give props, because where I work is the best place in town. It is. It has its faults and everything, but I'm from Newark, New Jersey, and where I work is the best facility here. And it's a good facility. It has so much potential. It has so much potential. And the compassionate care that is being provided and encouraged by the staff, by upper level staff, they insist. And so And that is one of the reasons, because my moral code has been set up for me that when I go around a population of people, the consumer and the provider, if it's not conducive really to good moral values, I'm out of there. I'll go, you know, because just like a friend of mine wrote in a piece today, Ms. Bree Lachey, that she told somebody, she said, my values have changed, my appetites. She said, I don't want your money. She didn't say I didn't need it, because I'm not going to tell anybody I don't need a paycheck right now. And the job provides a nice one for me. And I work for it, but so they didn't give me nothing. I want to put that out there too. And it's intentional. It's a fair exchange. They give me They give me a wage, but I have to talk to you, John, before I can say it's a fair wage.
Yeah,
So
you
I
do.
got,
You
I'm bringing my
gotta
man. I'm bringing my man.
talk to your shop steward, boy.
That's like, let me know about that. You know, I'm gonna do the work. I'm gonna put the work in, right? But I got a fair wage guy, you know, and the numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
So,
Right.
So that is one of the reasons I wanted to put some of these recordings together so that the treatment team, the treatment team, can hear us out.
You'll be rewarded first. Okay, I promise.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, I've been working hard on it. I just I had to get this thing done to so I don't have to keep, you know.
So you're doing a great job by me, John. I got to say.
Well,
so
if I get this thing launched, mm-hmm. Yeah. Give me if I, I thought I was going to get it done last weekend, but I didn't quite get it done. So anyway, software is like that. You know, you think it's 90% done, and it's like the last mile is all the little things that could go wrong. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure that they don't blow the app up.
So what is it that we could use in terms of so to get you some help? Because technically I am zero help to you.
Well, that's what we need.
People
who can edit the tapes, you know, with an audio editor, you know, people who are into that. I mean, anybody who's done it with music could do it. This is simple compared to doing it with music. It really is. Talk is nowhere near as hard to edit as multi-track sound. Okay, with five members of a band with five mics, and you're mixing it right. That takes somebody who, you know, really spends some time tuning all those channels, right?
That would not be me. Would not be
But there's kids around that do know how to do that, you know.
And I love that about them.
So we can get a volunteer where I could just send them the tape, and man, they could format it.
Yeah.
I could send them a tape, a header, a footer, and they come back and, you know, do some cool stuff with it if they want to. I mean, you know, it could be a lot better. All I do is run a routine called normalization, which basically just squeezes the extremes of sound in people's voices together a little bit. So like if I have a very deep voice and somebody else has a very high pitched voice, or someone has a loud voice and someone else has a soft voice, it moves them a little closer together, so you don't have the listener having to turn the volume knob up and down. You know, hear people people talk, right? You know, that kind of thing. So I run that, but other than that, I don't do any enhancement. There's a lot of, you know, cool little track things.
Yeah, real cool features. Yeah, I'm I spent some money trying to keep up with that stuff, and I said I let it go, John. I really did. I gave up on it. But I need a good teacher like you to stick right there with me. So this is one of the things that where I work, they have the wherewithal. They have I like what Senator Kennedy said. I mean, President John Kennedy said one time, he says, when you have ascertained a certain felt local need, you must then find someone who can exactly help in meeting that need, someone who has the wherewithal, right? And so they have the space and everything to put together some sustainable recovery, I'm going to say program, some activities to help people to get that jump start, you know, to find out exactly where their creativity lies after they get, after their disease gets into remission and it's controlled and, you know, they've gone a while without relapsing and those urges have gone by the way. And, you know, they can get in and go to a place where you can tap into your creative side, like learning how to put together a really great podcast about their experiences. And so they have a lot of space in this facility to put that together.
Well, it does take, because we're distributing stuff over the web, you know, you're kind of stuck with software, unless you want to, you know, paper ads and newspapers, which I don't know, reading them anymore. I just heard the other day that Disney wants to sell ABC.
Oh,
because nobody watches network news anymore that's under 40. Nobody. BP was saying that. It could be true. You know, but
the numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie.
I mean, it's the top sale.
Yeah,
oh, by the way, okay, I was going to ask you a question.
Sure. Shoot.
Do you think that the way a man treats his dog has something to do with his parenting? if you have to wait until you've bitten your staff 3 or 4 times. Just keep your dog up river a little bit, you know. You know what's going on there, and then it turns out, you know, Hunter, his surviving son, and it's been a tragic loss of 2 of his children, but his surviving son is clearly tripped up, you know. I mean, you know, he had to wait until that freak from the New York Times, Maureen Dowd, editorialized about his illegitimate son before anybody would admit it. And I mean, that was pretty embarrassing. But whatever. And then whatever he did over in the Ukraine.
That's why
he appears to have taken some money to the wrong people.
I love it when we talk about the politics.
What about the dogs?
Hey, you know, dogs will be dogs, man.
Well, I know, but you know,
what happened? Dog, I don't know. I'm not.
You know, well, his dog kept. He's had 3 dogs in the White House. Him, maybe it's his wife. Him and Jill had 3 dogs, German shepherds, and they run around biting people.
Oh, they bit somebody.
There's been numerous incidents where White House staff have been bitten by their dogs, and they had to send one away.
Now they've had
to send the other one away. But everybody's asking, you know, why did it take so long? And it's about 6 or 7 people been bitten.
Or they kept it quiet, man. I guess, yeah, there's a problem. Hey,
there's a problem. You know, there's a problem.
some people. Some people will get in the parade, man. Some people just want to know, is there a parade going on? Just keep asking, is there a parade? You know, you see people keep marching down the street blowing horns. I don't know. That's why President Obama was so cool, man. Why didn't we have any of these? He had Jeremiah Wright. That was his. I met somebody that was close to Pastor Wright, and he was telling me some things about that. But that's my president, man. He didn't have no whole lot of. I mean, he just had normal.
It was a class act from beginning to end.
Yeah, and he did it twice.
And his family too. Yeah, and his family too. Michelle, you know, the kids.
Yeah, the kids. They stayed the course. And them young ladies were under a lot of. Scrutiny, man, all the time, and they just took it. They took it with grace. They took it with grace. You never seen them ducking and running, hiding up under nothing. Twice as good in half the time.
Do you remember when John McCain was the Republican candidate against Obama back then, and he was. I remember he had a rally somewhere, and one of these fruitcakes got up and started yelling at McCain. You know, it says, "Oh, why don't you say something about that woman they call the first lady? She doesn't look like a first lady. And McCain says, he adopts a fake southern accent and says, why, honey, why, whatever do you mean?
That's him. That's him. Whatever do you mean?
You know, I'll hand it to McCain. He stood up and he says, there's not going to be any problem with Barack Obama as president. Man. You know, he's fully qualified to do a good job.
He stood up and he said,
he did stand up. He did stand up. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. Okay, good for him.
Yeah, good for John. Good for John. Man, that man went through a lot, man. He went through a lot, man. He went through a lot too. He went through a lot. I gotta give it to him. He went through a lot. I don't know, man. Some of these guys, but the country now is just, you can only take a sneak peek. You can't look at this whole stuff in one whop, because it'll take you under. You know, and people just,
right.
I do a whole lot of, introspecting. So I get a chance to step outside of my chaotic day most of the times and step back and try to, you know, enjoy the second half of the day in a quiet, calm kind of way, you know, that's how I spend most of my days now since the pandemic, actually. You
know, yeah.
Trying to figure out how to stay as calm as I can and have the ability to dodge a bullet if it comes, or economic bullets, because people are getting hit by those left and right up here.
How many people that have been indicted on 190 counts would not already be in jail? Or how many ordinary people would be how's he staying out of jail?
Good question. Yeah. Well, he got the right paint job. We can start right there. He has a paint job that, you know, he right there he get 10 points or 20 points. It used to be 100. But it has been it has been sliced and diced over the years, and people have come into, you know, truth, another kind of truth, not an alternative truth, or truth that people are created equal. But you know, we can't do nothing about. We got to create a new narrative about something. But I know skin color is one of the things that he gets away with. He gets a
sure does.
Yeah. So we got to put that out there, first of all. And the other part is, I don't know, man. People just don't know what the hell they're doing.
He's got backing.
He got to have something, man, because
he's got backing.
They would have snatched you off.
If he didn't have backing, it'd be over.
How many times have you been to court before? When did they wait for you to come in? When were you telling? Look, hold up.
I mean, when I was indicted, what? You know, back in the 70s, it was a peer. There wasn't any choice. I was detained.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's been a whole.
But I was only in jail for a week, you know, and then
what'd you do?
My friends, my, huh? Oh, what'd well, I was president of SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, at University of New York at Buffalo. And we had a strike on the campus that had multiple causes. The incident cause was, I've told you this before, I think, there was a, the basketball team were on scholarship because Buffalo had a, you know, competitive basketball team. Mm. at the time. And they were also, I think, all the starters, with the except one, was were African American, you know. And anyway, it was about the same time as the, I don't know whether you remember or not, there were a bunch of athletes at Mexico City at the Olympics that raised their fist.
Yeah. Oh, you were
the Olympics, yeah. You know.
Yeah, 70, I remember that. Yeah.
Around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These guys did the same
thing. John, he was a rebel, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, these guys did the same thing on the in halftime on the basketball court. You know, they stopped, didn't go anywhere, just raised their fist in solidarity with the people that were being reviled everywhere, except by Jesse Jackson. And anyway, so, but the Buffalo Police Department and campus security too chose that moment to invade an armed detachment of about 50 troopers.
Wow.
Into the gymnasium armed with shotguns. Turns out they were actually loaded with rock salt, not actual
But that rock salt
I got hit in the back with it, you know. But anyway, the place exploded. Okay, because this was the Buffalo Police Department had a little detachment that had called they called the Red Squad, trying to suppress communism everywhere, by which they meant, in the first place, the local Black Panther Party. And second place, you know, the student upheaval on the campus mostly over the war. But now, because of this incident that took place at the basketball game, okay, all of a sudden the whole freaking campus is now inflamed over, you know, what the hell were the cops doing breaking up a game because these guys had a moment of silence at halftime. But back then, so we ended up shutting down the whole university. And then the cops occupied the campus. They started blasting tear gas through all the dormitory windows. They shot people in the back. I got rock salt, you know. I remember this cop came up to me after he did that and said, I could have killed you, you know, blah, 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 you know. Well, okay.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
How old were you, Don?
I was 20 then. 21. I was 20. First year graduate student. 20, 21. Anyway, so things went from bad to worse about. Anyway,
they started setting
up these grand juries and indicting everybody that, you know, I mean, they focused on the basketball players, whose main beef, by the way, was that they were not allowed to major in anything except athletics. If they changed a major to be a math major, they lost their scholarship immediately.
No.
No, you know, you got to come up with $40,000 or something. Right. You know, so the whole place, and they grand juries indicted a lot of people. I got indicted because I was the president of the SDS at the time. And although it was just a chaotic situation. But anyway. It was a mess.
Yeah. You think it's gotten things have changed, certainly, right, on those college campuses. Yeah. They got to pay, and people who owe that old money, student loans. Did you have to take out loans, John?
No, because this is the interesting thing. The one of the things that happened in the 60s was that people coming off the GI Bill, one could use it for tuition at almost any four-year university if they wanted to back then. Okay, big incentive to get people to sign up as well as the draft, you know, to get in for the Vietnam thing, right? You know, and so you had that, and plus the there was a huge amount of money spent on trying to train up the American workforce. And you, if you had in 1964 or 63 or four, if you had a B average, you could get yourself either a half or a full ride to almost any state university. Okay. Mm-hmm. And also the foundations, like the Ford Foundation, if you scored, you know, reasonably well on what the test was, and then I guess it was the early SAT, then they give you a full ride to top universities. Okay. And so, and it wasn't anywhere near as expensive. I mean, back then, if it was a state university, I mean, I was mainly at the University of Virginia and the University of Kansas. My dad was born in Kansas, you know, so I got state tuition rates out there in Kansas. And I had to go there because in University of Virginia was all men, and I got married in 66. So we went to Kansas, and the tuition was next to nothing.
University of Virginia was all men?
Yeah, up until 66 or 67, right around, and then, you know, only the nursing school was women at the time, at least in Charlottesville. Now, I don't know. You had women's schools all over the state. Like my sister went to a school called Mary Baldwin.
Oh, which, okay. Yeah, they got a liberal arts, bunch of them in Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. You know, wow, I think they used to be finishing schools, but now they're
finishing school. What the hell?
Teachers,
is that?
Well, the teachers' colleges. I would call them that too. Okay. You know, you got to get people trained enough to be able to teach at least elementary, middle, and high school.
So let's switch gears for a second. I want to ask you a question about domain general and domain specific. What's your take on that in terms of running a company? What happens in a domain specific run company?
What do you mean by domain?
Like Amazon.
Oh.
Or it's not like UPS. They got a warehouse. Amazon pack boxes. They got a conveyor belt. And you have to do specific things.
But they have two big businesses. One is selling, the other is reselling. Remember, the majority of things that you buy through Amazon are provided by third parties. Mm-hmm. And those third parties pay a fee to Amazon for Amazon's role in marketing and shipping
packaging.
And guaranteeing delivery.
Packaging.
Now, sometimes the third party sources do the packaging, but if they do, they have to package according to Amazon standards, you know, so that it's accepted at the Amazon various
specific centers.
Yeah. So they have and then they also have another business, which is currently their most profitable business, which is called Amazon Web Services, which is their cloud computing services, which are vast, the biggest in the world. So they have five or six big businesses.
So what kind of business would you say that a privately owned drug rehabilitation facility, what would that be? Domain general or domain specific or both?
Well, I don't know. It depends on where their revenue is coming from. I mean, if their revenue is coming from insurance companies or public funds of some kind, if they're getting, you know, taking advantage, I'm not sure how that works, but and if foundations are using them as a tax shelter, you know, and so therefore donating money so that they don't have to pay taxes on certain amounts of income, they put it into nonprofits, right? That's acceptable thing. And maybe they get some research benefits out of it as well. It's not clear to me all the, I think there's a number of different motives why people would want to invest in that. Mm-hmm. Not all of them probably necessarily committed to the cause, like you mentioned before. See, I mean, mm-hmm. there are some people that think that poverty, a so-called quote unquote reasonable level of poverty would be one that threatens those who work for wages with you'd better enjoy what you have because things could be considerably worse. Take a look at these guys.
Yeah.
And, so there's a kind of
good point.
Divide and conquer kind of overall economic, macroeconomic, what do you call it, strategy there that would, if you were McKinsey and Company, for example, one of the biggest of the world's management consulting companies, which all mm-hmm. the big companies seem to hire somebody from them, then you would say, oh, well, you know, if you had an unemployment rate of 10%, you could solve that wage problem. You're spending too much money on wages. Everybody would be right. begging for a job at a lower rate. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think that would have been, so if the revenue source is coming from insurance companies, mm-hmm. well, then you got to remember that insurance companies' major way of making money is denying claims. If you don't deny claims, you never make a dime. Okay, ever.
Yeah, that's, okay,
so yeah,
makes sense. That makes good sense.
So you know, now obviously they gotta pay out something, otherwise it'll get around that, you know, no matter what you're paying a premium, you never get any claim paid.
You say it'll get around, John. It'll get around. Right? You don't want that to get around. No.
So you right. got that little
bad for business
there with those guys, but yeah.
Bad for business. It's bad for business.
Anyway, I mean, if you're running one of those operations, I assume the people running it are, must be reasonably committed to try and help.
I think. So.
You know, and so you're going to try to get your money wherever you can get it. I'm sure it's not easy, you know, scouring the countryside for you know, both donations and trying to get as many people covered by, if they're covered by insurance, to get the insurance companies to pay, you know, to pay for the care. But, you know, I don't know what it is. So if you're going to say, yeah, they use, I think they're probably pretty, a nonprofit is pretty tied to, you know, the project that its mission is focused on. Okay. I mean, it's not going to be moving. It's going to be trying to move money in, not move money out and then reinvest it. Okay. So, I think they would, you know, but in the process, you know, people can, I don't care where you are, especially in an economy as wild and so capitalistic as this one. You can end up making a bad deal, pal.
Yeah.
And you can get taken. So, you know, it's that's why, you know, the cowboys claim they love it until they get their ass kicked. Then they don't love it.
Then they don't love it anymore. Not as much. That's true. And wages pay. And at where I work, and one of the things that I find that people do not like to pay, they won't pay attention. That's all we ask, is that you pay attention. And as soon as they hear the word pay, they go to sleep.
Not even attention, huh?
Pay attention. They're not going to pay that. You know, that's don't worry. Send that to the Credit Collection Bureau. And, you know, and on a note, man, sometimes I feel like people are not getting better, but I know they are because I'm getting better. I'm getting better at my job. And I just had an awakening the other day, a guy that came to the program and he completed and he was so happy and, you know, went out and a week later he overdosed. So fortunately he didn't die, but he did overdose. And so the sustainable recovery, like after rehab, then what? The information that's being distributed, people are not paying attention to it. You know, we're giving it out. We're giving out, they're putting the information in front of people, but somehow people won't connect. And so the only other alternative that we have is to keep doing it over and over and over. And some people make it. You know, I made it so far, so good. Like you said, the guy was falling off. So far, so good.
Like falling off that building, yeah.
So far, so good, man. You know,
so far, so good.
Yeah, so, you know, and
I like that.
And instead of, yeah, I do too, man. Instead of falling now, you know, I'm soaring. I'm flying high, man, with what's going on, because I'm gathering information on my way down. Good information, you know, that can really, really help. It's helping me and it's helping a lot of people. So That's my story and I'm sticking to it. John, it's been great, man. We're 5:47.
All right, it's good talking to you, pal.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right.
We got to do this more often.
Well, we do. You got to come on down here and
I know.
I'll be making it down here sometime. I miss seeing you.
Okay, you too, man. All right. Take care, John. Good show, man.